Good morning. Welcome in. It's WEEI Football Sunday. I'm Christian Arcand. Mego's here. Shime Time's here. What's up, guys? How we doing?
What's up, Arcand?
Hello.
This song pumps me up.
Song slaps.
You know what? If people were making fun of McAdoo for playing this song, I do not.
No.
I will not join in that chorus of mocking Kenny Loggins and the Danger Zone. I remember when my dad got a new car once when we were like, I don't know, I was like 10 years old. And it came with to show how great the stereo system was. It came with a cassette tape.
Yeah.
Jacob, a cassette tape is a small rectangle that you used to put in the tape player, and it would play music. You wouldn't know. But anyway, it was Kenny Loggins. It was Highway to the Danger Zone. And I remember sitting in the car. It was like a minivan.
Roll the windows
sitting
down.
Sitting in the car, windows down, Loggins blaring.
Are those the words?
Highway to the Danger Zone.
Is it Highway to the Danger Zone?
Yeah, what'd you
think? I thought it was I went to the Danger Zone.
No, it's Highway to the Danger Zone.
Oh, wow.
Mego.
I've never Googled it. It sounds like I went to the.
It does not sound like that.
I
understand.
Highway to the Danger Zone?
But no, it's Highway to the Danger Zone.
Is the name of the song Highway to the Danger Zone?
No, the name of the song is just Danger Zone.
Okay, so I don't think that's ridiculous that I heard I went to the Danger Zone. Why would you be on a highway? You're flying planes.
You know,
it's not like it's about their when they ride the motorcycles. They're flying planes.
Who's That's flying not a highway.
Planes? Well, that was in the movie.
It's from Top Gun.
Right.
So why would
was the song written for Top Gun though?
No, it was not.
Exactly.
No,
are you
it was
sure?
not. I'm sure of that.
Are
yes.
you sure it wasn't written for Top Gun?
Ben McAdoo, when he was hired this offseason, head coach was given the vague title of senior offensive assistant, and he decided, you know what? I'm going to be senior assistant of the Danger Zone, and that's what he's been doing. Unfortunately, Alex Van Pelt had
was written for Top Gun.
A bit of a misstep this year. It was?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Jacob just said in my ear.
All right. Did you look it up?
I was right.
I didn't know that.
So why are you writing about highways when the movie's about planes?
It's a good question.
Because the plane's up high.
That's why I thought it was I went to the Danger Zone.
Highway. Huh?
I don't think it's that crazy of like a miss here.
It's like a Tiny Dancer miss here.
Well, it is if you don't listen to the song very much.
Once you hear that, you can never
go back.
Or excuse me while I kiss this guy.
Jimi
Hendrix.
It's all over the place.
Yeah, right.
A lot of
it was
like
just
that.
For the Top Gun show. All right, never mind. I got that one wrong. Anyways, Kenny Loggins aside, Top Gun aside, Ben McAdoo aside, everything aside, the Patriots have a matchup here, their second matchup of the season with the Miami Dolphins. They're in Miami, which has historically been just a terrible place for them to play. I was just going back over it, all the quarterbacks that they've lost to over the years when they played in Miami, the Ryan Tannehills and the Fitzpatricks and the Chad Hennies, and just go on and on down the list, the Cleo Lemons.
Chad Henney.
All these guys, you know, it's just it never, ever seems to work out for them when they go down there and play. And yet, I feel like Patriots fans this week are oddly confident about this game. Do you guys, am I crazy here? Or does it seem like Patriots fans are really believing, maybe not so much in them winning, but certainly covering this spread? It's not a huge one, but it's big enough that I think some people are looking at it, looking at Drake May and the way he's played lately, looking at the Dolphins as a team that, you know, despite their record, they are back at full strength for the most part, and they do have some guys really contributing like Jonnu Smith, and they're thinking, you know, we saw these guys a couple of weeks ago. They didn't have their starting quarterback, obviously, but we saw them. They weren't that scary. We can go out there and beat them. I'm not one of these people, by the way. I also think that the thing you just heard there in the beginning, the Alex Van Pelt, Marcus Jones situation, not great for the Patriots this week. We also had another year go by and Robert Kraft denied in the Football Hall of Fame. We'll get to all of those things as well. We got a big show today. Fitzy will join us in about 45 minutes. We'll also be talking with Tommy Curran, Wiggy's Keys, Andy Hart. Mark joins the show as well, and we'll have Pop, Lock, and Drop at the end of the show like we always do. Where are we starting today, Mega?
Well, I'll start with what you just said, where I do think, with all due respect, Patriots brain, like the infection is back, where you see the Patriots logo on the field and you think, if we're in a game, we should win this game. We can be in this game. So if we're in this game and it's a one-score game, we should win this game because that's how it works out for the Patriots. And I feel like it's on me to remind you that the team does not have a lot of talent. And it appears that you have a great quarterback, but if there's anything that we're learning about a rookie quarterback, especially last week when you look at the game plan that the coaches rolled out on defense, is that he's not going to win you these games on his own. And so I understand going in and thinking like, we could steal this one from the Dolphins. I don't think that's irrational. I just don't think it should be the expectation for any of these weeks. And I think there's been a hard pivot because you did go 2-1 after those soft comments. And then you went up and you had a strong start against the Rams last week. Like, I get all of that. I just would say, like, keep your feet on the ground and look at Drake May's development as still the main goal of this season, because you're not a team that's going anywhere. And so I don't know. Like, I don't want to be a downer, but I just think that it's starting to feel like every Sunday the expectations are getting, you're losing sight of the reality of what your team is. And then you're setting yourself up to be really pissed off at the end of the game because you are in a situation where it's a sophomore receiver who's an undersized slot receiver and your rookie quarterback, and they're not on the same page, and you're like, what the hell happened there? It's the Patriots. Do you understand what I'm saying, Sean?
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I would be in the category of I'm optimistic. I'm not confident that the Patriots will win this game. I don't think the Patriots will win this game at all, but I think they can cover. Like, 7.5 is fine. Like, I go to gambling brain and I'm like, yeah, like, backdoor cover. Drake May scores a late touchdown, and then maybe they get the ball back and turn it over at the very last end of the game, and it's they lose like 27-20, and like they
a tolerable
cover.
Loss like last week with the Rams, which is a loss that I could look at and say, you know what, the win would have been nice, but I can live with it.
And I think that's kind of what I expect every week, is a tolerable loss, because I don't expect it. As Megan pointed out, this team is not talented.
No.
Like, outside of the quarterback, there is a limited amount of talent on this team. So for me, I go into it, I'm like, okay, tolerable loss, cover the spread, maybe don't win, maybe you were never really going or threatening to win, but you made it seem like you were kind of close. I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. Just don't get blown out. Don't embarrass yourself on the football field is kind of where I'm at with the New England Patriots, and I'm good. Like, I know Drake May is good. I know he's really talented. He's only getting better, and maybe once, you know, you get any kind of talent around him at all, like, then you can expect to win football games. But until then, like, tolerable losses are good by me.
Yeah, that's sort of where I am too, and I think that that's what you shoot for in a game like this, because I don't have a good feeling about this game, and the reason I don't is because of the way the Dolphins matched up with the Rams and because of the way the Patriots matched up with the Rams, because you saw that Rams offensive line just tossing the Patriots D-line around, right? I mean, it was not really much of a competition.
You couldn't get pressure with seven.
Yeah. I mean, whatever they did. And Stafford knew the blitz is coming. He's great against the blitz. All that's true. We talked about that all week long. But still, I mean, they weren't even close to him. Another clean jersey game. You know I hate those. And if you watched 2 weeks ago, the Miami Dolphins defense was all over him. I mean, really all over him. Not even with blitzes, with four-man rushes. They did blitz a little bit, but they got to him quickly. They disrupted the run game. Kyron Williams couldn't do anything, and it really looked like they were just in control. That they ended up winning the game too, of course. And I think that that's sort of where I land with this, is that unless the Patriots can really, really upgrade their play in the trenches, I have a feeling that the Dolphins are going to make this a really tough game for Drake May, a really tough game for Ramondre Stevenson. And if those two guys aren't in sync, or at the very least not comfortable in their respective roles, in May, I mean, listen, I think there's going to be a lot of plays today where Drake May's running around, running for his life, trying to extend the play, and maybe he'll connect with somebody down the field. And I think that that's part of his game, and, you know, great. But if you're doing that every other snap, which is kind of what Stafford was doing 2 weeks ago against this front, then I think it's going to be a lot tougher than maybe we're hoping for. I do think that he is due, in Drake May's case, he is due for a bit of a letdown of a game, because I think last week he looked very good, and he's looked better and better each week. I think eventually all these rookies hit a bit of a wall. They all sort of have that back down to earth moment. I think that's probably going to be this game for him. I'd like to be wrong, of course, and for people saying, oh, Arkan, this isn't about covering the spread. It's not necessarily about covering the spread. It's about keeping it close.
Use the spread. It's not necessarily I gambled and won. Like, I'm not gambling on this game. I'm just not. But the idea of using the spread is just to indicate, oh, it was relatively close. Like, Vegas set a line that you were basically hitting over or under. Right.
Are you reaching expectations? Like,
yeah.
Are you matching expectations? I'm also curious. We spend so much time talking about the offense. I am curious to see the adjustments that they make on defense this game, because the defensive game plan last week was so bad.
Mm. So bad.
And they didn't waver from it at all. They didn't move from it
at Christian
all.
Gonzalez has to be on Tyreek Hill this week, right?
Assuming that Gonzalez is healthy.
True.
Like, if he's out there, he should be on Tyreek Hill. I also think the secondary probably should at least physically match up a little bit better than they did last week with size versus speed. Nobody matches Tyreek Hill's speed. But if you could at least not have the mismatch of, like, I don't know, Marcus Jones on Cooper Kupp. Like, that's
a big
mismatch. You can hopefully square that away with your personnel better. But I was really surprised, not to hate on the guy, but that DeMarcus Covington had those rumors around about being looked at for head coaching jobs because of the game plan that they rolled out on Sunday. It was an odd time for that little news tidbit to come out. So I think they have something to prove today, like just to show a little bit more competency and something that makes sense beyond the limited personnel that they have from the injuries and the Jabril Peppers situation. You still need to roll out a game plan that makes sense and adjust in game.
And I think for me, like, I think that's the big key, right? Is I need to see them adjust on defense in game, because they tend to start pretty well. Last couple weeks, the Patriots get out in front and get in leads, and Drake may get you off.
Both sides of the ball start well.
Yeah, they start really well, but then, you know, midway, end of the first quarter, the defense just starts to fall apart. And I think that's because they're just sticking to their game plan, and there's no adjusting on the fly. There's no changing. There's no there's no ability to mold with whatever the offense is trying to do. And so I get concerned that they come out with a game plan and they just stick to it and they don't make any changes until halftime. And then they come out the second half and then they have their changes a little bit, but then the other team adjusts. And then again, you don't adjust. And so for me, I need to see more flexibility out of DeMarcus Covington in the defense.
And I think it goes back 2 weeks. I think it goes back to that Chicago game, because that was one thing about Jerod Mayo, for better or for worse, he likes to telegraph what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. He likes to tell you what he's going to do. This is how we're going to run our offense. We're going to be all about running the ball. And on defense, we're going to do this, this, and this. Against Chicago, they blitzed Caleb Williams. They made his life miserable. That offensive line certainly helped, and that team was in disarray that week. So, you know, they fired their offensive coordinator and everything else. But they were getting to the quarterback. They were disrupting him. They sacked him a million times. And I think that Mayo just looked at that. And then he looked at the Rams and he said, you know, we're just going to do that same thing with Matthew Stafford this week. And Matthew Stafford, you can't do that to. He's just too good against the blitz. He knew when it was coming. I mean, he's, you know, the flashing signs at his coach on the sideline, and it just didn't work out. And that was not something that they really adjusted to. You're right about that as well, Shyam. And that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that Mayo and, to a lesser extent, Covington get kind of set in their ways. Kind of like, you remember Dick LeBeau with the Steelers?
Yeah.
Like, they ran the 3-4.
That's why Tom Brady owned him.
Blitzburg, and we're going to do it the same way every week, and you got to beat it, and this is how we're going to go. And we got this guy here and that guy there, and here's Harrison, and here's Porter, and, you know, this is how we're going to run our defense. And you either could beat it or you couldn't. And I feel like that's sort of how Mayo goes about his coaching style. It's part of what they do. It's part of their identity. And I do understand it to a certain extent, because he doesn't have a lot of experience, but I also think that you can't be so steadfast in it that you don't make adjustments. Like, you have to be able to make adjustments. And I wonder, even with a matchup like this, Tyreek Hill's not having a great season. Jaylen Waddle's not having a great season. You need to be aware of those guys, but there's other ways this team can beat you. Their running backs can beat you. Jonnu Smith can beat you. Not necessarily the type of thing that you saw with the Rams. Like, the Rams have two good wide receivers. They lean on them the entire game. You try and take those guys away here, then Tua can beat you in other ways.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's the case. I mean, they have so many weapons across the board that you need to be prepared for all of them. And, like, I think it's an opportunity, just because the Dolphins' offense has looked clunky at times since Tua has come back. They have not looked as smooth as they have in previous, like, last year.
Tyreek Hill's on pace for under 900 yards.
It doesn't look like the great McDaniel offense.
There's zero explosion to it.
And I know a bunch of those games were with Snoop Huntley, so it's like that's a big part of it, but still, yeah, right.
Like, even, I mean, Tyreek Hill, what, 1,700 yards last year?
Yeah.
He's on pace for half that? Like, that's kind of wild. And so I just feel like they have to be far more deliberate in their offense right now. And so this is an opportunity for you as a defense to kind of make a stand and limit what should be, or what is, a really talented offense.
All that, and we barely even mentioned Marcus Jones. The whole Marcus Jones situation we started with the audio bit. Are you guys just played out on that from the weekday radio?
We did talk a lot about it this week.
A lot.
What do you got on it, Mega?
I was in the room, and the only thing that I would say is, like, I feel like it's not as much on AVP as maybe some people on social media 100%. Like to say it is, because, oh, why, you don't go back and watch 3 years worth of game tape because you have those guys on that team. Like, what
Mago, that was a big highlight when he had that walk off.
I know.
Well, yeah, but that was 2 years ago.
I know,
didn't take a single offensive snap last year.
Sure, but he's done it before.
If you're going to put it on anybody, I I talked to Marcus Jones that day after the fact, and he said, he was like, it always starts with the head coach, like, in terms of where I'm going to play. And so I said, did you have a conversation with Jerod Mayo this season about getting in on offense? And he was kind of like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a big conversation, but we had small conversations about it. So it seems to me like you have a player in Marcus Jones who was talking to the head coach about how he would like to be on offense, at least at some point during this season.
And the head coach would say nothing to the offensive coordinator.
And then reached out himself to the offensive coordinator to say, I'd really like to be on offense. Like, as much as publicly Marcus Jones has said he's a corner, and the coaches say we see him as a corner, he's a cornerstone in the defensive unit. Like, that's how we see him. It's clear that when he's talking to the coaches, he's asking to be put on offense.
He's campaigning in the background.
And so, to me, the biggest red flag that raises is just the communication between the guy who Jerod Mayo calls the head coach of the offense and himself.
Especially when they preached all offseason collaboration. Mm-hmm. This is a moment that you would have noticed the collaboration, but instead, you see it as segmented portions of the organization. The offense is here, the defense is here, the special teams is here, and there's no...
And marry the twain shall meet.
What Jerod should be doing is he should have his fingers in all of it, and instead it feels like all he does is kind of help DeMarcus Covington and that's it.
Yeah, I don't think it like speaks to AVP's, I don't know, like makes him seem like he... I don't think it should make him seem like he's overmatched for the job or that he's incompetent or anything like that. To me, it's one of those things where it adds to the disorganization, the sloppiness that we've seen from this group of coaches, players, personnel all together throughout the season. And it's just kind of like an annoying, unforced error where you're like, you guys never talked about that.
I just can't believe he said that. I can't believe he said that out loud into a microphone. You know, like, I understand he's very honest and he's very sincere, very kind of an earnest guy, you know, and he'll say whatever and he'd be self-deprecating. And I think he thought it was just going to be a self-deprecating comment.
Right.
But it's more than that. It made the whole organization look bad.
He probably thought that it made Marcus seem like a self-starter too.
Right.
Which is how he described him, which is true. But it's like, that's not really how you want to demonstrate yourself to be. You know?
Yeah, but like, I don't think this makes AVP look bad. Like, when he says that, it doesn't make him look bad.
I just don't think it should.
But
It does make him look bad.
I don't think it does at all.
How is that?
I think it makes the organization look stupid. I don't think it makes him look stupid. He walked in and he was handed a list of all his personnel on offense by Elliot Wolf and Jerod Mayo. You want to know who wasn't on that list? Marcus Jones, because Jerod Mayo also said we were focused on getting him ready to play defense. And like,
he said he had to Google Marcus Jones and who he was.
That doesn't make him look bad? You're misinterpreting his words. He said he received a text from someone that claimed to be Marcus Jones. And Alex Van Pelt even says, I felt like if it was Marcus Jones on the Patriots, he'd just come talk to me in the building. And so he thought it was somebody else outside of the organization
Gen
and
Z
was confused.
Is so weird. They'll like text you sitting across the
Yes, like that's but that that's my point. Like he's like I didn't realize it was the Marcus Jones on my football team because I just would expect him to walk in my office and say something to me instead of texting me. So again, that doesn't make AVP look bad. It makes the organization look bad.
I understand why people look at it on its face and they're like, "Oh, our offensive coordinator doesn't even know that this guy was part of an explosive play in 2022.
Well, also, he's the kick returner, and he's the reason why the offense has had good field position a lot this year, too.
And yet they won't put him on the kickoff
returns. Okay, I know, I'm just saying, but like that should be enough for him to realize, you know what, this guy's got some pretty elusive tendencies here.
But
maybe we should think about this and at least have it go through his mind, and then he'll realize, oh, yeah, wow, he's already played offense before.
Arcan, but you
all
know,
right, this should work. I mean, it's week 11 here.
You guys talked about this like all week.
Well,
now you're all fired up.
Here we're going
again. Here we go again.
Arcan, you know this. There's been a million corners throughout the history of football that have returned kicks and not played on offense.
Yeah, like, but he also played on offense in college, so.
Sure, but again, AVP didn't draft him.
So
AVP wasn't here when he played offensive plays before. Like, it's been 2 years since he took an offensive snap with the New England Patriots. AVP knows none of this. He wasn't with the organization. He had nothing to do with the New England Patriots. He knew nothing about Marcus Jones.
Highlights were on SportsCenter, Shime. You probably saw him.
How many times do you hear from coaches and other players that they don't watch other teams play?
I don't believe them when they say that.
You don't believe? Oh, come on.
I don't. They don't watch other teams?
They
come on, of course they do.
They watch the tape of the team that's coming. coming up. They don't go. They don't sit down on Sunday and watch all the games because they're too busy playing and coaching.
Like, yeah, that's, it's true. It's not like he was, you know,
he's not
Josh
watching.
Well,
none of them saw
like
Saquon Barkley do his backwards the hurdle there either,
I'm
too,
not sure
right?
Yeah, maybe because that was all over Twitter.
Yeah, of course.
Not, so I'm not sure that's the same level as Marcus Jones
it's not,
going in for a gadget.
But Marcus Jones on those touchdowns, he had three returns and it was buzzing his rookie year. People were talking about him like he was this next explosive player on the Patriots. He wasn't some unknown, you know, he wasn't some obscure player. Like, those were three instances where people thought, all right, this guy could really be something in the league. You can't tell me Alex Van Pelt never heard of him.
Of course I can. 2 years ago when Alex Van Pelt was dealing with a Cleveland Browns offense that was, like, sputtering, he wasn't worried about Marcus Jones.
I didn't say he was worried about him. I said he'd heard of him.
Heard of him, worried about him, doesn't matter. Like, I do not put this on AVP at all.
And if this was week two or three, then I'd say fine. It's week 11. At some point, you have to go back and look at the tape.
You don't have to go back and look at 2022.
Why not?
You could take some
Offense sucks. Your offense sucks. That's why.
Who else was on this team in 2022? Hunter Henry, and that's it.
Kendrick Bourne.
Kendrick Bourne. Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne.
Ramondre.
And Marcus Jones.
Marcus Jones was on, again, he doesn't know that he can play offense at all. He has never been told he can play offense.
All right, well, he shouldn't have to be told, Shime. He's a coach on the team.
But he hasn't been with the Patriots ever before. This is his
first
year
with
the team.
He's been on the team for 11 weeks. He's been the offensive coordinator.
And how many times was he told that Marcus Jones was usable on offense?
I don't think he needs to be told is the point. He shouldn't have to be told all these things.
He's not on the depth chart, on any roster, anywhere, it's listed as defensive back.
And kick returner.
And punt returner.
Kick returner. And those guys, sometimes, you know, it translates on offense.
Why is the offensive coordinator think that I can use him on offense if they won't even use him on kickoffs?
What are you talking about? They did use him on kickoffs.
No, they use him on punt returns.
On punt returns, you're right. Sorry.
They don't use him on kickoffs.
Punt returns. Fine, they use him on punt returns, then. He's a
good punt
returner.
Because Jeremy Springer even said, we don't want him taking hits. So if I'm the offensive coordinator, why would a thought like that ever cross my mind?
Because
that I'm going to take a defensive back off the defense and put him on offense.
Because he's your best punt returner. He's been one of your best offensive weapons this year as a punt returner. You can't deny that.
But they won't even put him on kickoffs, so as an offensive coordinator, why would I ever think to put him on offense?
5 minutes over in this segment, and you guys didn't even want to have this conversation.
I know. See, this is why.
I was like, what about the Marcus Jones thing? And you guys both are dead silent, and you're like, ugh, we talked about it all week.
We really did. I didn't realize accountability for Van Pelt whatsoever.
No,
I had no idea that was
coming. This is on Mayo and Wolf.
All right. 617-779-7937. What do you think about this, Patriots fans? Should Alex Van Pelt be taking a little heat for this, or do you completely ignore all that like Shime is here and say it's all about Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo not giving him the memo on Marcus Jones? Let us know. 617-779-7937. In the meantime, here's Shime Time with What's Trending. WEEI Football Sunday, and you know what that music means. It is time for Mego's Emotional Polar Coaster. We just had one, Shime and I, just now, arguing about Alex Van Pelt.
It was a fun ride.
It was.
We're like halfway through my segment now.
I know, I'm sorry. We jumped way into it.
You had to argue about the thing you didn't want to talk about.
That we did not even want to discuss. I didn't want to discuss it because I felt like we'd done it to death. I did not anticipate someone absolving Van Pelt completely. I wasn't prepared for that. So I just, my instincts kicked in, and that's what happened.
I thought you were going to push back on that. You're like, no, I did absolve him completely.
Yes, 100%.
Alex Van Pelt has to wear at least a small amount of that.
If you're, I'm a big fan of pie, especially in the Thanksgiving time of year. I would assign him maybe 5% of the blame by there.
5%.
Five?
Five.
No, he's got to wear at least 15.
Nope. No way.
That's crazy.
No, this is, it's like 70%, 55% Elliott Wolf, 45.
Elliott Wolf?
Yep.
He's not making the coaching decisions.
40% Gerard Mayo, 5% on Van Pelt.
Is Elliott Wolf supposed to walk into the room and give like a bio of every single player on the
team?
Well,
he's in charge of personnel, right? So like he should be telling the new guy that he hired at offensive coordinator, hey, you can use this guy on offense.
Yeah, I do feel
you're an NFL coordinator. Know your players. Know the league.
He's not an offensive player.
He was, though.
When?
And he's your
2 years ago.
And he's your punt returner, so you should know that.
Okay, a punt returner isn't an offensive player.
Yes.
Dion was one of the most explosive, awesome punt returners and corners ever. How many times did they play him on offense?
Right, but if they had, I bet you the new offensive coordinator would have been like, hey, I remember that time Dion Sanders played on offense and scored a touchdown.
And yet when they did do it on offense, they didn't do it more.
Again, a very different profile than
probably a little bit different, I would say.
Yes, exactly.
What is the question of the polar coaster today, man?
The polar coaster question is, who will have a stronger individual performance at quarterback today? Tua or Drake May? I know you think this is a landslide, Arcan, when you pulled it up. I just actually thought that Drake was going to get even more because this is a Patriots audience that I believe I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
Drake got, adjusted a little bit. Drake got 71%, Tua got 29%. I'm kind of surprised with how pro-Patriots and even more so pro-Drake May the audience is, that 29% of people would say, and Tua's still, he's still overmatched, like, or he's still, he's going to overachieve compared to Drake May, even if it's just because of the weapons that he has out there. And as you said, Waddle and Hill have not looked like they looked in the last two seasons. But he's still got a lot more, tons more around him than Drake does.
I think, I mean, you brought it up in the first segment. I think instead of Patriot brain, I think a lot of people just have Drake May brain. And it's like everybody just knows.
You definitely do.
Well, I had it before he was even a New England Patriot, mm-hmm. So I was the first.
You've been Drake-pilled.
I was, what is it? What the epicenter, or what is it? Project Zero, whatever they call it. When,
what are you talking about?
When you know, I forget. Regardless, it's like whatever.
Patient Zero.
Patient Zero. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. I'm an idiot. I think most people just have Drake May brain, and that's why the poll is the way it is.
I think that's probably true. That it's just Patriots fans, and they like Drake May, and they want to assume that he's better. In terms of who's going to have a better day today. Let me just read you. Do you know that Tua has a 73% completion percentage this year? He's completing at a remarkable rate. He doesn't have a ton of games where he's over 300 yards.
His ADOT's not that high either, right?
Neither does No, it's not. And he's got a very, very high QB rating, 101.5 passer. QB rating on ESPN's over 60. I think that Drake May is going to go out there and play well. I don't expect him to have a terrible game. I do think he's probably due for one of those rookie wall kind of games, and I think that's possible. It could happen today, but even if it does, I still think he's going to do what he's done all year, which is go out there, make throws, have flashes where he looks like the QB that Chime's been dreaming about since he was patient zero 2 years ago, mm-hmm. And everything else. But in terms of who's going to have a better day today, I just think Tua is going to have a much better day today. I think he's going to be, the offense is going to come easier to him. He's not going to be getting chased around. He's got better guys to throw to, playmakers on his offense. He has a much more effective running game than the Patriots have. I just don't see how, even if you think Drake May is much better than Tua, who's going to have a better game today? It's Tua.
And that's why I didn't want to say, who would you rather have? Because I think the answer for most people is pretty obvious. At least in our neck of the woods, you'd say Drake May. Everything's there that you see. You can just be a casual fan and be like, I want that quarterback. I like that guy.
That's the guy I would like.
But if Drake May has a better day than Tua, then the Patriots win. Like, easily.
You think so?
Yes,
I do.
Agreed.
So I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Even if you look at the stat line, I think if Drake has a better day, if Drake is able to get out there, he hasn't been as much of the scrambling threat, and I think that's by design, mm-hmm. as he has a rush threat of the last two games, because his intermediate game has looked really strong, where even last week, like, especially in the first half, there were times where you could see where he would have, a couple weeks ago, taken off, found an avenue to run, and instead he finds Hunter Henry or DeMario Douglas in that little mid-range area where he can throw to. And so I think that's progress, but I don't want them to, like, take him so far in the other direction where I'd still like to see him run for some of these first downs. I would still like to see a designed run in the red zone.
Still waiting on that
Please.
One.
Please.
That's on
AVP.
I don't
know, like, I understand you don't want to put everything on the kid, but he's a big physical kid. And if you're down in the red zone, like, I think he would like that. I think he would enjoy the option of a designed run.
Oh, he would love that.
So I don't understand why.
And it's worked before. It worked in that preseason game.
I don't understand why they haven't at least tried it in one of these opportunities.
Yeah, I think that there's a chance, like, Drake May could outpass Tua by, like, 100 yards and they still lose his football
game.
Yeah, I just think Miami's run game, as Arcan pointed out, is much more dynamic than yours. And they have the opportunity to win a football game by running the football and playing defense, especially against you, a team that a few weeks ago against the Jaguars, they ran it 18 straight times.
Very leaky.
Like, yeah, I don't believe in this Patriots defense enough. And I think that there are still, you know, pretty ripe for turnovers on offense, whether it's Drake May throws a bad pick or Ramondre Stevenson puts the ball on the ground, which we've seen him do a bunch this year, or one of the receivers does it, because Lord knows I don't trust any of them. So I just think there are multiple avenues in which the Miami Dolphins can win this football game, whereas for the Patriots, it's just Drake May has to be freaking awesome, otherwise you lose.
Yeah, and even in the games, Drake May's had some games where he wasn't awesome and they won.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that in general, when you have
it was really just the Bears game.
Just
right?
The Bears game, and he wasn't bad in that game. But yeah, I think that's the only one you can really look at, that the one that he started.
But I don't think the Patriots are getting 9 sacks on Tua this week after what
so
I saw
either.
Against Stafford last week.
Yeah, I don't think that's realistic. And I think that in general, you know, you're talking about a team that offensively has had your number for a while now. And I mean, this goes back a ways. This goes back to Belichick and Brady. This goes back beyond Drake May and anything that he's doing or not doing, Gerard Mayo and sort of all that stuff. I think that Drake May's, and maybe this is just, you know, being too close to it, but for all of the universal praise that he gets, he hasn't really done much. You know, like, he gets talked about like he's the greatest thing in the world. And this is opponents, this is national media, this is sort of everybody now. And I kind of look at, and I like him too, but I mean, at some point, you got to stop turning the ball over so much. You can't end so many games with a game-ending interception. You got to win a few more games.
But you don't put that last one on him.
Well, I mean, not 100%, but I do think that there was clearly a miscommunication there.
Shots Hero AVP didn't. He said the ball was in the right place.
That's true.
He said that was on pop.
Yeah, he did, and he probably has a bit more of an incentive to do that.
But Drake still deserves some of the blame for that, 100%.
He still threw it up there, and I mean, you know, the other one, the 5%? Booty
5%?
No, like 30%.
Oh, wow.
More than Van Pelt gets for Marcus Jones.
I think that Shy might have AVP over Drake now.
Maybe.
Let's not get crazy.
Whoever you want to blame it on, I still think, I mean, he holds on to the ball. He's fumbled a bunch. Like, that wasn't his only interception of that game either.
He gets strip sacked like once every 3 games.
It happens a few times.
That was the only interception he had in that game.
Was it?
Yeah, in the Rams game, that was the only one he threw.
Oh, you're right. All right. I was thinking about the bad one he had against Tennessee, the one on the sideline. The tuba. What was the tuba interception? That was against Tennessee.
That was against Chicago the week before.
All right, well, I'm mixing up my interceptions now. He has a lot of interceptions.
He's throwing a front.
My point is, he throws a bunch of picks, and he's a rookie, obviously, and these are all mistakes that I think as Patriots fans, we were willing to deal with and accept and sort of be like, okay, I'm not going to write this kid off just because he makes some rookie mistakes.
Yeah, because he looks awesome.
He does, sometimes.
And in that Rams game,
has he looked awesome enough for all this universal, glowing, gushing praise? I'm just not sure about that.
I think contextually, yes, because everything around him, no offense, is so bad. Like, it's so bad that for him to look as awesome as he looks with everything around him, I think that's what people are excited about. They're like, we didn't even think that he could survive out there. We didn't think he could survive 4 quarters, and look how awesome he looks. So, yeah, he's not having these moments where he's, like, leading a 2-minute to, you know, like an overtime victory. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done it. He doesn't look like Brady.
No.
Okay.
He doesn't even look like Bo Nix yet. Like, Bo Nix is having a better year than he is.
You love Bo Nix.
Well, Bo Nix is having a better season than him.
He also has a far better play caller than Drake.
He doesn't have much better.
He's also almost 27.
His offensive line is better, though, too. Yes, he is 26.
Bo Nix is an adult.
4 years older.
He's a grown man. He can probably grow a mustache.
He can get a rental car.
I don't think Drake May can grow a mustache. So this is the line. You can't be holding the interceptions and the turnovers against Drake May until he can grow a mustache. Not a trash sack. That's the line you have to hold him at for maturity.
Well, man, you two are unbelievable.
I also think it lasts.
Nothing's anybody's fault ever.
What do you
mean? Not if you can't grow a mustache.
Yeah. That's fair. But, like, you look at last week's game against the Rams. Outside of that very last throw, which you can blame whoever you want, blame Drake, blame Pop, doesn't matter. Outside of that throw, he was awesome in that game.
He was good in that game, yes.
Awesome, outside of that final throw. And, again, it's a situation where you're down 6, you have the ball at your own 10, which is a whole different coaching mistake that we can readdress, talking about Marcus Jones in particular, and not going for another punt return. But, like, he felt like he needed it all in one play. And, again, that's a rookie's mentality where you're down points at the end of a football game. Mm-hmm. You're playing with a team that doesn't have a whole lot of weapons. And it's like, all right, I got to get as much as I can on one play. And he takes too big of a shot. It's the same thing in overtime in the Titans game. You know, he finds himself in a situation down 3 in overtime. All right, we need it all. And that's not the case. And I want him to just kind of focus on that. Like, outside of that one moment in that Rams game, he was awesome. He was almost perfect in that game. And so,
in
like
the first quarter, it was. I was very.
The dude completed 75% of his passes.
Yeah, Arcan.
Like, he was good. I didn't say he was
awesome.
Bad.
No, I know. And I'm just saying, like, it's
Arcan
just
Arcan wants Bo Nix.
Okay.
That's what
well, whatever. I mean, listen, Bo Nix is having a better year. I didn't say that I necessarily wanted him on this team, and I do think Drake May has more better physical and raw talent than Nix does. But let's call it for what it is. The whole point I'm saying here is that all this praise is coming still on potential and on potential of what he could be.
Sure.
He was good in that game, but we're still not really seeing him put it all together yet. Like, he hasn't had a terrible game. He also hasn't had a oh my god, this guy's the future type of game yet. Not to me anyway. I don't think. And I think that if you really, I mean, listen, as Patriots fans and people watching and seeing this team and all the crap around it and all these rookie coaches and everything else, you know it's not a good situation for a rookie quarterback to be in. And I think that's something that we all sort of wrestled with in the offseason was, is this the right setting and the right situation to even airdrop someone as good as Drake May or whatever you thought about him into and expect him to be successful? And I think that, you know, this is what happens. Bo Nix, on the other hand, has a great coach. Not really much in the way of pass catchers, but still, I mean, there's a hierarchy of these rookie quarterbacks, and Drake May's still third. Sorry, Dan Orlovsky, he's third right now. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll come back and talk to Fitzy, who is not at the tailgate, because the tailgate's in Miami, but he is up here, and he'll join us next. It's WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan, Megan Ottolini, Chris Scheim here in studio, and joining us live from parts unknown. You're not in Miami today, are you, Fitzy?
No, I am sadly not down in beautiful Miami Gardens, Florida, though it would be nice. It's 80 and absolutely ideal for this time of year for the Patriots to travel to their House of Horrors.
Yes, indeed. And if you were there, I'd recommend not speeding down that road next to the stadium. As we saw, those cops don't mess around down there. Fitzy, let's go ahead and start with what I think is on everybody's mind right now, and that is that whole Alex Van Pelt, Marcus Jones situation from earlier this week. Chris Scheim has completely absolved Van Pelt of any responsibility for it. He's thrown it all on Mayo and all on Elliott Wolf. What do you think about this whole thing? Is it getting overblown, and where do you sort of land on the communication in that building?
Now, if anyone happened to have missed the first half an hour of the show, you can obviously use the Odyssey app, go to the Google Play Store, Apple Apps, AUDACY, and listen to WEI at your leisure. But if you happen to and you don't have time, let me give you a quick reenactment of the first half an hour.
Jesus Christ, how do you not understand? How do you not understand? Alex Van Pelt should have watched some friggin' tape.
What are you talking about? I don't give him 5% of it.
Ooh,
I thought it was I ride in the danger zone.
No, I went.
That was
guys,
a very good
all
recap.
Of you, please.
That was good.
I well went done. To the danger zone.
When you guys are done, please proceed to the front to pick up your Marconis. That was absolute radio gold. Now, that said, Christian, I am 100% with you on this one.
Thank you.
It is your job. I know, Scheim, when we were talking about it Thursday night on the evening program, I know you absolved him of more blame than I did, and I just wanted to hear your perspective on it as opposed to fighting back, because we got a lot of radio to do in 90 minutes. Now here, where you guys can expound on it further, even though you said you didn't want to talk about it, Arcan, kind of like the same way everyone's going to say, I don't want to talk about politics at the Thanksgiving dinner table.
Oh, yeah.
And then 5 minutes in, people are going to be like, why'd you vote for him, you son of a bitch?
It's coming.
Oh, it's definitely yeah. coming, 100%. I'm prepared. It's much like winter. It's coming. So I just don't understand how communication, and this is what had me rattled Monday when we were on Mego, and it still has me rattled 6 days later. My confidence in the entire collaborative, silo-free, future-thinking, forward-looking brain structure that is the coaching environment there at Gillette right now is kind of rattled. I'm sorry, like when your offense is struggling so terribly and you're looking to just get some sort of asset, weaponry, playmaker, you know, dynamic somebody out there, and you don't have a coach talk to your coordinator and say, like, by the way, they used him at receiver 2 years ago. I was here. I was the defensive assistant, by the way. Hey, you can't just say 5% on Alex Van Pelt. Like, the coach definitely has to let him know. Elliott Wolf needs to lay out a blueprint of all the different concentric circles where people could combine positions and positional groupings. But Van Pelt needs to do a little bit of a deep dive. I understand when the Patriots, led by Bailey Zappi, whooped up on the Browns in 2022, quarterback of the Browns then, Jacoby Brissett, that Marcus Jones didn't get any run on the offensive side of the ball. But like, I'm with you, Arcan, the idea, like when you see him with the ball in his hands, how does somebody not say on the offensive front, hey, this guy's pretty good. Think we could actually go ask if we could borrow him from special teams or defense one of these days?
I wonder if he's ever played offense. Maybe I should go look that. Oh, he has played offense. Wow, 2 years ago. But, amazing.
And craziest thing happened yesterday in the Colorado-Kansas game. Travis Hunter came in on offense. He took a 2-yard slant at the 50-yard line and took it 50 yards to the house. Kind of like Marcus Jones did on that famous Thursday night football game 2 years ago against the Bills, where Mac Jones was caught yelling on camera, "The quick game effing sucks."
While we're talking about the coaching, Fitzy, were you surprised to hear that DeMarcus Covington, there's a report out that he was attracting attention for possible head coaching vacancies next season?
Yes and no. And the reason why it's a yes and no, yes, considering the way that things have gone defensively this season, because I think at this point now we have to move past apologizing for the Patriots' injuries on the defensive front and losing the spine of the defense with Barmore and Bentley and Peppers. Barmore's back. Hopefully he'll be a bit more impactful today. The defense hasn't looked good, and it's been a lot of the decisions that have been made collaboratively by Brian Belichick, we'll imagine, DeMarcus Covington, Gerard Mayo, et al. So I wouldn't think that his stock is at its highest now, Mego, but go back a year or two when he was being asked to be an assistant and coach defense, I believe, at the Senior Bowl. His name is very well regarded. He is thought of as one of the bright young potential coaching prospects. So I think basically at this point, Covington is kind of getting in on previous reputation and accolades. But I wouldn't say, when comparing him now to Ben Johnson or insert name of hot coordinator du jour, both offensively and defensively around the league, that he's like a must buy.
Fitzy, we talked about it with our emotional roller coaster today. Who do you think has a better day, Drake May or Tua Tagovailoa? And if Drake May does have a better day, do the Patriots win?
Now, see, I was with Arcand on the Marcus Jones / Alex Van Pelt issue, but I'm more with you on this issue, Shime. I think Drake May can absolutely outplay Tua Tagovailoa today, and the Dolphins can still win and win handily. Or at least not handily, but like in a game where it's not quite as contested as we would hope or think that it would be. And it's because of their ability to generate a pass rush and the fact that guys like Chop Robinson are coming around now, filling in for Jalen Phillips, creating havoc along the line. Calais Campbell is playing some of the best football of his life at the age of 38, which is just remarkable. Got a great safety in Javon Holland, Jalen Ramsey. So defense is playing pretty well for Miami. And then offensively, their line is good. If Teron Armstead is healthy, and he's a go, I know he was questionable this week, he's an absolute force and a people mover. And they've got three running backs I think most teams would kill to have one of in starter Devon Achane, Jalen Wright, the rookie out of Tennessee, and then Raheem Mostert. I think they're going to control the ball for far too long today. And even though Drake's going to do his thing, there's a reason why I titled the Sunday 7, Shime, the Drake Matriots, because every Sunday or whenever the Pats play, it's Drake and. Who else is going to step up? The running game is non-existent. The offensive line purchased at 5 below can only do what it can do. They have a starting 5? No, they're the 5 below. It's rough shakes. Mego, you were right earlier when you said there's just not talent on this team. You know, you can only yell at a three-legged dog for being a three-legged dog for so long.
And you shouldn't, because it's probably not their fault.
Probably not the three-legged dog's fault, I would say.
How many dogs is it really their fault that they're a three-legged dog?
That's a good question for maybe another show. Fitzy, before we let you go, is Robert Kraft ever going to make it in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, I just hope it's not a posthumous gesture by the NFL. And I think whatever this concoction or cocktail is of jealousy for the accomplishments during the double dynastic run, frustration over some of his campaigning and lobbying, and then disdain over the various gates and whatnot, like, just get over it, people. There are other owners in there that don't have a fifth of the LinkedIn page that Robert Kraft does. And it isn't just that he's done things for Foxborough, Gillette, and the New England Patriots operation and New England at large. Look at all the work he's done with television deals, negotiating labor deals. The guy deserves a bronze bust and a yellow jacket, and I hope he gets it before it's too late.
All right, that is the voice of Nick Fitzy Stevens. You can hear him on Six Rings postgame show today, along with Andy Hart. Thank you very much, Fitzy. It's always good to talk with you.
It's always great to talk to you, Arkin. Have a great show.
All right. That's Fitzy. He's brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easiest way to get rid of your old car. Donate today. Your car could be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That is Cars with a K. And the number 4, we're going to keep it rolling with the guest, Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joins us next.